So as I said, it's an interesting topic tonight. It's biblical faith and the AI apocalypse. So I'm excited to hear what our speaker has to say. Mr. Stephen Snoblin is with us this evening.
Well, good evening, everyone. We are going to talk about biblical faith and the AI apocalypse. This is a huge topic. I'm not going to be able to cover every aspect of artificial intelligence. Indeed, I'm not an expert on artificial intelligence. In my day job, I am a historian of science and technology. So I'm going to be approaching this topic in part from that standpoint. And in fact, I'm going to be using a lot of slides that I've used in the last academic term. And of course, I teach on the relationship between science and religion. I also have an interest in the history of communication technology, and I teach a university course on that topic. So some material from those courses. But also, I am a Bible student, and I will be bringing that perspective. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just provide you with some sense of what AI is, and it's not one thing. And then we're going to look at various biblical frameworks that will allow us to navigate the age of AI. And then we will offer some concluding comments about what the believer should do and how the believer should live in this highly technological age. So let's begin. I want to start with some very general points about religion and technology. So modern technological culture, this includes high tech and the digital world, interestingly exhibits a number of parallels with traditional religion. So the first bullet point there is our topic for tonight, AI apocalypse, a kind of technological doomsday. I will define what AI apocalypse is in a few moments. And then a somewhat similar term, but with a different meaning, apocalyptic AI. And this is a form of technological millenarianism and utopianism that points to a kind of digital paradise to come. I will say a little bit more about that in a few moments. There are also various technological scenarios for the afterlife. There are various scientists and other people who rather than rely on religion for immortality, are relying on science and technology. And this includes cryonics, freezing bodies with the hope that they can be resuscitated. That's probably a false hope. But also ideas about uploading minds onto computer systems, probably also a false hope. But nevertheless, it's very easy to see the parallels between this kind of secular technological quest and traditional religious quests for the afterlife. And then online fellowship and communion. This is something that scaled up in a major way during COVID when various different religious traditions started to go online for services because of the pandemic. And this continues. Indeed, we're doing this in a hybrid sense tonight. So this has brought positives. It's brought people together from around the world in our community. It's also brought negatives. It's led to some disengagements. So it's been a bit of both, and that is typical of technology. Technology as salvific. So this is technology as providing you with a form of salvation, right? So not seeking salvation in religion, but seeking it in technology. Technological Gnosticism. So something that I just mentioned a few moments ago, the idea that you could take your mind and upload it to a computer system and live in a kind of digital reality. This is a form of Gnosticism. Gnosticism, ancient Gnosticism, had an animus towards the physical world. And the desire was always for your soul to depart the body, which is a prison, and live in a realm of pure spiritual existence. This is not at all a biblical perspective, but it is the perspective of ancient and modern forms of Gnosticism. The deification of technology as God, technology making humans gods, so lesser deities. humans playing God. We're going to come back to that, and one example would be the creation of AI in the image of humans. There are also various scenarios for the world being computer simulation, and I'm not going to talk about that this evening, but I will just say very briefly that one of the interesting things about this scenario, which I do not at all believe, is that it has certain parallels to the traditional religious design argument. Because what you're looking for is you're looking for structures in nature, you're looking for ratios, numerical patterns, and you're also looking for discreteness, that is to say granularity in reality. So that would be, for some people, evidence that there is a computer code behind everything. So I don't believe this. A lot of people don't believe it. But it is interesting because it is, again, another example of a kind of technological replacement religious perspective. Technological Towers of Babel, we just had read for us, the Tower of Babel account. I'm going to come back to that as well. So what is artificial intelligence? So I'm just going to provide you with a brief history. Digital computers emerged in the Second World War as part of the Allied effort against the Nazis, and one of the chief goals was to decipher the Nazi Enigma machine, which was a mechanical coding machine. And so, as is the case with many technologies, the technology emerged, and the development of the technology accelerated during wartime. Think of airplanes, for example. So that is when we have digital computers for the first time. There are mechanical computers that go back several hundred years, and of course the abacus. But now we have digital computers. Alan Turing, one of the computer scientists working at Bletchley Park, which is one of the centers during the Second World War, published a paper in 1950 called Computing, Machinery, and Intelligence. And in this paper, he asked what has now become an enduring question. Can machines think? In the same paper, he proposed a test that could determine if a computer could perform in such a way that its answers to questions were indistinguishable from human responses. So you would have someone operating the computer on the other side of a wall, so you couldn't tell if it was a computer or a person. And if the answers it spat out to you were consistent with a human, then it would pass what is now called the Turing test. The descriptor artificial intelligence was introduced by computer scientist John McCarthy in 1956 at the first ever conference dedicated to artificial intelligence, and this was in Dartmouth College in the United States. Some milestones in the history of AI include Frank Rosenblatt's development of a neural network called Mark I Perceptron that could learn in a trial and error manner, somewhat similar to the way humans and indeed some animals learn. The development of neural networks in the 1980s that use a back propagation algorithm to train themselves. IBM's computer Deep Blue winning both a match and a rematch against one-time world chess champion Garry Kasparov in 1997. And actually, I have a earlier example of this. This is Arthur Samuel demonstrating a machine learning program that could play checkers. This is around 1959, and indeed could play checkers better than a human. Another milestone was in 2011 when IBM's computer system Watson, named after one of the IBM pioneers, winning against top Jeopardy players Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter. And as we all know, a big moment happened late last year with the public release of large language models. Most famously, ChatGPT. Okay, so this is based on an article called What is Artificial Intelligence on the IBM.com website. Now, I have two working definitions of AI, one from John McCarthy, already mentioned. This is from 2004. It is the science and engineering of making intelligent machines, especially intelligent computer programs, is related to the similar task of using computers to understand human intelligence, but AI does not have to confine itself to methods that are biologically observable. Another one from New Scientist. Artificial intelligence, or AI, simply meaning software used by computers to mimic aspects of human intelligence. For example, a program that recommends what you should read based on books you've bought, or a robot vacuum that has a basic grasp of the world around it. Now, I want to just editorialize on this. We all know that there are algorithms that are used by Google and by Amazon, YouTube and other online sites. They track your requests and then they channel you in particular directions. So you get more of the same. Now, this has a number of consequences. One is it generates more revenue for these websites and companies like Amazon, but it also has very profound political repercussions, because what it tends to do is it tends to put people in political silos, right? They are channeled towards right-wing or left-wing politics. And this, we now know, is one of the reasons why the world is becoming more and more divided. But there are other consequences. There was a case a few years ago when a father of a young woman who was still living at home started to receive in the mail maternity products. And he was wondering, where did this come from? And then a few months later, his daughter told him, oh, by the way, Dad, I'm pregnant. So what was happening is the company, it might have been Amazon, knew that she was pregnant before her own family did, on the basis of her search requests, right? So there are huge issues related to autonomy and privacy that come out of these search systems. All right, four possible functions for AI. Stuart Russell and Peter Norvig developed a fourfold model of possible functions or goals for AI. So a human approach. So this is designing AI so it's like human intelligence. Systems that think like humans, systems that act like humans. And then what they call the ideal approach, systems that think rationally and systems that act rationally. So this is an attempt to produce robust AI technology, but not modeling it after human beings. So these are two trajectories in AI research and development. Now, people who work in this field often distinguish between weak AI and strong AI. So weak AI is also known as narrow AI or artificial narrow AI. It's designed for very particular tasks, and weak AI is the current limit of AI. So an example of this would be ChatGPT. As powerful as it is actually fairly narrow in what it can do. Strong AI, on the other hand, which does not exist yet, some people think it will never exist. I don't know the answer to that question, but there is the potential for it to exist. And it's often abbreviated as AGI. So strong AI would be artificial general intelligence. So this is AI that is commensurate with the human brain. And then artificial superintelligence, ASI, would be AI that exceeds the human brain. And many researchers and futurists say that at this point, it is game over for humanity based on Darwinian views of evolution. Nick Bostrom, a Swedish philosopher of computing who teaches at Oxford University, published a book in 2014 called Superintelligence, Paths, Dangers, and Strategies. And he captures some of the implications, some of the uses, some of the effects of superintelligence if it emerges. We also have generative AI. So I've alluded to this already. These are large language models, LLMs, and this would be text generators such as OpenAI's ChatGPT, which was released in a beta version in November of last year, and art generators such as DALL-E 2. If you've ever seen any images, generated by Dell E2, they're actually very haunting. They're very creepy. And that's because they don't quite get it right. So this form of AI has been heavily criticized because it's doing things that traditionally humans have done. So creative things. So if you're going to use a calculator for calculating sums and that sort of thing, most people wouldn't have a problem with that because it's just speeding up what humans can do anyways, and it doesn't involve creativity, artistic view of things. But these technologies are more and more infringing on what traditionally humans uniquely could do. Now, some would say that it's kind of a parlor trick. They're not really doing it. But nevertheless, large language models are very powerful. So another point is AI can be good. AI can be evil. Now, this is not simply because humans can use technology for good and evil. That is true. Think of nuclear bombs, a nuclear bomb. Nuclear bombs have been used twice in anger in the Second World War against Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But potentially a nuclear bomb could be used to deflect a near-Earth object that's careening towards the Earth to destroy it. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think God would allow that. But that is a potential positive use of even something as potentially destructive as nuclear power. Let me give you an example, a real-life example. This is the Weizsäcker computer, which operated between 1954 and 1955 at the Weizmann Institute in Israel. And what you're looking at is part of the computer, not all of it. And this is a photograph I took in November 2018. And the gentleman there, who was at the time around 78, was a very young man when he worked on this very first digital computer in Israel. I think it was the fifth digital computer in the world. So one of the first things, if not the first thing, they used it for was to calculate the two spots on the surface of the Earth where the tide doesn't go up and down. I don't know if you knew this, but there are two spots. One of them is just off the southern tip of South America. I think most people would applaud that. They would see that as a good use of AI. It's not creative. It's just doing lots and lots and lots and lots of number crunching, although it was very slow, certainly by today's standards. Another example would be the use of AI in medical diagnoses. So scanning thousands and thousands of medical research papers that humanly would be impossible. So I think a lot of people would see that as another positive example. So I want to make it very clear that I'm not saying that AI, or at least weak AI, is always a bad thing. But there are potentially problematic and even dangerous applications. Now, years ago in the 1940s, during World War II, the science and science fiction author Isaac Asimov set out three laws of robotics. Number one, a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. Number two, a robot must obey orders given to it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And number three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. So then the idea here is that you design a robot, and this also applies to computers and AI, so that it is an impossibility for it to harm human beings. And there's a lot of discussion about applying these laws to things like ChatGPT. But as we've seen over the last few months, it doesn't work fully because ChatGPT is generating lots of dangerous information. And there have been other cases where AI has openly said that it is interested in destroying humanity. I don't think AI is conscious. Some people think it is. I don't think that is at all the issue. But nevertheless, it is very powerful, and because of that, very dangerous. Just briefly, I want to just say something about technological singularities. So this is a technological development that has an ecological effect on the world. That is to say, It has a systematic effect. It affects everything. So one example of this would be the internet. The internet has radically changed the way we think, the way we do things, the way we buy things, the way we learn. So that is a kind of singularity. Now, the notion of the singularity was first proposed by the computer scientist John von Neumann, who was involved in the Manhattan Project, and he described it as the ever-accelerating progress of technology gives the appearance of approaching some essential singularity in the history of the race, human race, beyond which human affairs, as we know them, could not continue. This is a particular version of the singularity in which humanity becomes unsustainable after the singularity. Not all versions of it make that point. The singularity is a moment after which technological progress will become incomprehensibly rapid and complicated. Now, there are people who decry this and say we should avoid this. Equally, there are other people who celebrate it. So you've got the technophobes and the technophiles, and often the technophiles are the ones who have the power. So I'm going to list here five types of singularities, religious and mystical. So in the Christian tradition, a singularity would be the advent of Christ, the first advent of Christ. And relatedly, another singularity would be the return of Christ. Everything changes with the return of Christ. It's a singular, unique moment in history. There are mathematical, cosmological singularity. A cosmological singularity would be the model of the Big Bang, that everything was originally the size of a proton and then expanded. And technological singularities, we're talking about those, and they occur quite often in science fiction. Now, this man right here, Ray Kurzweil, is a technophile, big time. And this documentary, which came out a few years ago, Transcendent Man, explores his life. So he, early on, designed a speech synthesizer. He's very well known in the deaf community because of this. But he has made a number of predictions about where technology is going. And he believes in the singularity. He believes that we're going to reach artificial general intelligence in the year 2029. And he kind of wants that to happen. So he is promoting this. He speaks about six epochs. So this is just his view of history, right? So his argument, and he's using not a religious view of things. He's actually Jewish, but he is, as far as I'm aware, an agnostic or even an atheist. So this is a completely naturalistic framework. So he says things began with physics and chemistry, and then you have biology emerging and DNA, which of course has a code, and then brains, human brains in particular, emerge, and then you get technology, then you have a merger of technology and human intelligence, and then he says the universe wakes up. So this is his singularity, that technology expands throughout the universe. Now, there are a lot of people who think that Ray Kurzweil is a crank, that he is a false prophet. I tend to be in that particular camp. So I want to just emphasize that these predictions, some of them are very scary. Some of them are dislocating and disorienting. But often that's all they are, is predictions. And some of these will not come to pass. All right, AI as an existential risk to human life. Concerns about AI were notched up a level in November 2020 with the release of a beta version of an AI program called ChatGPT. We mentioned this. Chat Generative Pre-trained Transformer is what that stands for. Now, after this, AI, weak AI is not a new thing, as I've already said. There were a number of think tanks that released statements warning of the potential for things to go very, very badly wrong. In March 2023, the Future of Life Institute, notice the hopeful implication of that title, the Future of Life Institute, released a petition signed by many prominent figures in computer and AI titled "Pause Giant AI Experiments, an Open Letter." And it begins with this statement: We call on all AI labs to immediately pause for at least 6 months the training of AI systems more powerful than GPT-4, which is the next generation. Its signatories include Elon Musk and Steve Wozniak, who is the co-founder of the computer company Apple, along with the late Steve Jobs. In late March 2023, the Center for the Study of Existential Risk at the University of Cambridge issued a statement called CSER's Response to Pause Giant AI Experiments in Open Letter. So there are, I think, three centers, think tanks, for the study of existential risk, that is to say, the study of existential risk to humans. And this includes the possibility of near-Earth objects striking the Earth, nuclear holocaust, but of course, climate catastrophe. All right, so here is the Future of Life Institute's open letter. I just mentioned that, and this is the first paragraph. AI systems with human competitive intelligence can pose profound risks to society and humanity. Remember, this letter is signed by many people who are actually working in this field, so they know what they're talking about. As shown by extensive research and acknowledged by top AI labs, you can see some notes there, so it's all referenced. As stated in the widely endorsed Asilomar AI principles, advanced AI could represent a profound change in the history of life on Earth and should be planned for and managed with commensurate care and resources. Unfortunately, this level of planning and management is not happening, even though recent months have seen AI labs locked in an out-of-control race to develop and deploy ever more powerful digital minds that no one, not even their creators, can understand, predict, or reliably control. So, and then it goes on. You can find this statement online. Policymaking in the pause is the same group, Future of Life Institute. What can policymakers do now to combat risks from advanced AI systems? Dan Hendricks of the Center for AI Safety released a paper entitled Natural Selection Favors AI Over Humans. In late May 2023, so just a few days ago, the Center for AI Safety, the same group that Dan Hendricks is involved in, released a dramatic 22-word statement. Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. This statement was also signed by a number of prominent researchers in AI and related fields, including so-called godfather of AI, Jeffrey Hinton, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, and DeepMind CEO Demis Hassabis. Okay. Another twist on this is OI, organoid intelligence. So this is a new line of research in which human brain cells are cultured to develop into small brain organoids. These can learn and manifest very rudimentary powers. So is this a line of research that should be pursued for the potential benefits of those suffering from brain diseases, or is it a kind of Frankensteinian phenomenon that should be avoided? All right. Let's ask this question. Can AI be HI? HI is human intelligence. So some tests for what it means to be made in the image of the human. Can artificial intelligence ever be perfectly equivalent to human intelligence? So many researchers who look at this say, no, it won't be the case because we are embodied creatures. We live in bodies. And that affects the way we think. That affects the way we navigate the world. Could AI be self-aware, have a sense of self, or have a consciousness? Could AI experience dreams, night dreams, or daydreams? Could AI gain insights from mental mistakes? Could AI manifest a sense of humor? Could AI exhibit emotional responses like those due to physical embodiment? Could AI show intuition? Could AI manifest an aesthetic sense? Could AI demonstrate creativity and inquisitiveness? Could AI experience mental anguish? Could AI feel? Could AI sin? Or does that word even have any meaning in this context? Could AI display altruism, love, have faith, believe in God? Could AI be worshipped? Might AI be worshipped? I'll come back to that question in a few moments. All right, so as promised, I'm going to introduce some religious metaphors, and these are actually, with one partial exception, all biblical metaphors. And these, I think, for the biblical Christian, will be useful for navigating the AI age. And also technological singularities, more generally speaking. Okay, so first of all, and I'm going through these concepts as they appear in the Bible. So playing God, humans as finite creators. That's the important point, finite creators. So in Genesis chapter 1, God creates the heavens and the earth and everything that's in them. And this includes human beings. But in the Judeo-Christian tradition, God is omniscient and omnipotent. Humans who play God, on the other hand, do so without these benefits. Thus, they lack foresight and cannot predict all the outcomes of their actions. Some of these may be negative or even powerfully destructive. So, playing God, in many science fiction scenarios, the outcomes are not very good for the creators or for humanity in general. And then there's the concept of the image of God, and theologians who look at this often use the Latin, imago Dei, which just means image of God. So where does that come from? Well, of course, that is found in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 27. In the Genesis creation, it's only humans who are granted the image of God, not animals. So might AI, or at least AGI, also bear the image of God if it's made in the image of humans? Or is this a distinction unique for humanity? It's a distinction we want to be unique for humanity. And then there's the desire to be like God. So moving to Genesis chapter 3, the serpent telling Adam and Eve that they will not die, but also that they would be like God if they eat of the fruit of this tree. And often in popular culture, it's called the forbidden fruit. So this theme of the risks of acquiring power through knowledge and even attaining some of the powers of God is deeply embedded in the Western tradition, including its literature. It's a very nice and useful template for discussing AI. And then there's the Tower of Babel. So Chase read that earlier for us. And arguably, it provides for us an archetypal technological singularity. So this is a large structure. It's a kind of skyscraper. What it is in its original context is a Mesopotamian mud brick structure. So there's an illustration, and you can see the largest modern brick structure there, comparison, and then the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is a lot taller. Now these, we know from archaeology and from history, are essentially artificial mountains. And the priest would go up to the top, and the idea is that that's where they would meet with God. Now, this is a tale that speaks to human hubris, right? So these people want to make a name for themselves. They want to elevate themselves to the level of God. But what we see is that God intervenes in what we could call, maybe somewhat anachronistically, a technological reset. And God does this by mixing up the builder's language into many tongues. So unable to communicate with each other, the project is abandoned. So does modern society face technological projects that are too potentially powerful that they should not be pursued? And might some of these projects instill in humans a false sense of confidence of in their own abilities that could lead to technological recklessness? By the way, just as an aside, the account of the Tower of Babel is structured in a chiasm, which actually mimics the structure of a ziggurat. And you can see in the chiasm, the central feature right here is the following. And the Lord said, if as one people all sharing the common language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be beyond them. Right? So this is why I'm saying this is a kind of technological singularity. God intervenes. And there is this reset. So they're back to start again. This is a Renaissance portrayal of the Tower of Babel set in a town in the Netherlands. You can see the architecture is anachronistic. It's actually partly based on the Roman Colosseum. And in the left-hand corner, there's a king. And he is talking to some of the workers. And this king is meant to be Nimrod. And so one of the things that the painter is trying to do here is, and this is Pieter Bruegel the Elder, is to speak to the Spanish conquest of the Netherlands and how the Netherlanders were oppressed by the Spanish. More largely, we can see how these massive technological projects can be used to oppress people and used to keep people in awe of a particular power, whether it be a nation state or indeed today a corporation. Idolatry is another useful category for us to think about. In the first of the Ten Commandments, there is a prohibition of idolatry. God said, "You shall have no other gods before me." And this idea of idolatry is even adopted in secular culture where people talk about making things into idols. And this can lead to all kinds of problems that we lose our sense of proportion, et cetera, et cetera. Also in the Ten Commandments, stealing, there's a prohibition against theft. So one of the issues that generative AI raises, whether it produces text or art, is that it's actually using the works of humans. And this process is called scraping the internet and other digital sources. Truth and falsehood, the ninth of the Ten Commandments prohibits bearing false witness against one's neighbor. More largely, the Bible advocates for truth and against deception, such as unjust balances. God himself is called a God of truth. Also relevant is the Bible's condemnation of false prophets. And as I've already said, Ray Kurzweil and other technological gurus are often called false prophets. Then there is the mark of the beast. And this is well known even by people who don't actually know a lot about the Bible. And it's interpreted in various different ways. And I'm not going to get into what the ultimate interpretation of this is. But what we see in this text is an example of an oppressive system. So let's turn there. Revelation chapter 13 and the end of the chapter. I have the ESV version here. So in Revelation 13, we have the first beast, the beast that rises out of the sea. Then we have the second beast. The first beast is worshipped. So at one level, we're talking about some kind of system here, political system or religious system. Second beast is the beast of the earth. And in verse 15, we read, "And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain." So at some level, this is an idol. And there were actually pagan idols that were hollow, where priests would go inside them and speak, so that people would think that the idol was actually a god speaking to them, which is clearly a form of deception. Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is the name of the beast or the number of his name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. The Greek is actually 666, not 6 3 times, but obviously 660 are multiples of six. So this example has been raised recently because various biometric and other security systems, including palm scanning systems used by Amazon, for example, and I'll come back to that. So whatever this text ultimately refers to, this language of enforcing worship on pain of losing the right to buy and sell resonates with what is going on today. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute or two. All right, so AI apocalypse or apocalyptic AI. So many commentators on AI fall into two basic camps, each view of which uses the biblical expression apocalypse. So apocalypsis is the first word of the book of Revelation. So first, there are those who see AI as having devastating and perhaps fatal consequences for humanity. This is the AI apocalypse. And number two, there are those who have utopian visions for it. In sum, those who fear it and those who cheer it. Now, in the biblical tradition, and in particular, the book of Revelation, we have this very distinct arrow of time. And it's very different from what you see in Eastern traditions and in Eastern religions, such as Hinduism, where the dominant metaphor of time is a cycle. In the Bible, that is not the case. Yes, there are smaller cycles in the book of Ecclesiastes, but those are subordinated to this overarching arrow of time. I have two Greek words here, arche and telos. Arche means beginning, and telos means end, but end not in the sense of hitting a brick wall, end in the sense of our word goal, right? So the idea is that the arrow of time is moving in a particular direction. And ultimately, that is somewhere good. We see this in the Old Testament, the idea of the Messianic Age, and this is reinforced in Revelation, particularly Revelation 20, with the thousand-year millennium. But the, there's supposed to be a little explosion in that little gap there. But the arrow of time has a plot line, and part of that plot line is that there's something negative before the positive. We're going to see cataclysms. We're going to see dislocations and disruptions in society. I'm a historian. I believe that what we're seeing on the earth right now in Western culture, but not just Western culture, is end-stage civilizational decline. There are many indicators that we are moving into collapse of civilization. I realize that's scary, but those of us who have faith have another perspective on this. But certainly what we're seeing in society is consistent with this biblical vision. So apocalyptic AI is this idea that you want to have a new age of high technology and the apocalypse, visions of heaven in robotics, artificial intelligence, and virtual reality. And this author, Robert Gracchi, openly uses language from the Judeo-Christian tradition and celebrates this idea. Now, coming out of Judaic thought, so this is my last example, which is partly biblical because this is the golem. The word golem is actually found in Psalm 139. It's the only time it's found in the Hebrew Bible. It refers to a gestating baby in the womb. It's not fully formed yet. It's forming. So in Jewish tradition, there is this idea of a rabbi named Rabbi Lowe in Prague, in what is now the Czech Republic, who creates this kind of robot out of clay, and it's called the Golem, and it saves the Jews in that city from a pogrom. Now, what you're seeing here is an artistic depiction of this being, who is not a human. He's less than a human. But on his forehead, you can see three Hebrew letters, Aleph, Mem, and Tau. And so the idea here is you animate this creature, and in the Jewish tradition, various magical incantations are used. But if you want to deanimate the creature, you erase the Aleph on the forehead. And so the word Emet, which means truth, becomes met, which is the Hebrew word for death. And then the being is deanimated. So what this is a kind of kill switch. And this is actually very important when you're designing a computer system, you're designing AI. Do we have these kill switches? Well, that's a very important question. In the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, which was released in 1968, famously there is a AI system called the HAL 9000, who is who goes rogue, and he is actually deanimated by that astronaut there. This is Norbert Wiener, who is a very important mathematician and the one who invented the concept of cybernetics. He published a book in 1948 called Cybernetics or Control and Communication in the Animal and the Machine. And he explores the dynamic of feedback in machines, biology, and human society. Well, he published a book called God and Golem, and he uses this idea of the golem. So this is a lumbering creature that kind of follows your instructions, but you can't entirely predict what the creature does. So the creature is potentially dangerous. And the back cover goes into some detail about what how this analogy works. And it actually alludes to the computer that could play checkers, which I referred to earlier. Another Jewish thinker, Gershom Scholem, who died in 1982, when Israel was designing its second digital computer, said, you need to call this the Golem. And this is it. This is in Israel. And you can see the word Golem there in the Hebrew and in an English transliteration. And he appealed. He was actually asked to dedicate this computer, which is at the Weizmann Institute to this day. And he said to the Golem, the computer and its creator, develop peacefully and don't destroy the world. Shalom. And that is from a publication, 1966, but the speech was given in July 1965. Okay, the term Golem is used in my field in the history and philosophy of science, or largely for technology, that there are risks involved in creating powerful technology because you don't always know the unintended consequences of the technology. All right, so another question that we ought to be asking is AI, or could AI, or some applications of AI be seen as equivalent to religion or replacing religion? Well, Neil MacArthur, the director of the Center for Professional and Applied Ethics at the University of Manitoba, in an article published on the 15th of March, 2023, said that we need to prepare for the emergence of AI religion. So I have the question here, not only AI religion, but devotion or idolatry. He says, we are about to witness the birth of a new kind of religion in the next few years, or perhaps even months. We will see the emergence of sects, S-E-C-T-S, devoted to the worship of artificial intelligence, AI. The latest generation of AI-powered chatbots trained on large language models have left their early users awestruck and sometimes terrified by their power. These are the same sublime emotions that lie at the heart of our experience of the divine. People already seek religious meaning from very diverse sources. There are, for instance, multiple religions that worship extraterrestrials or their teachings, their supposed teachings. As these chatbots come to be used by billions of people, it is inevitable that some of these users will see the AIs as higher beings. We've kind of already touched on this. We must prepare for the implications. There are several pathways by which AI religions will emerge. First, some people will come to see AI as a higher power. Generative AI that can create or produce new content possesses several characteristics that are often associated with divine beings, like deities or prophets. Number one, it displays a level of intelligence that goes beyond that of most humans. Indeed, its knowledge appears limitless. Number two, it is capable of great feats of creativity. It can write poetry, compose music, and generate art in almost any style, close to instantaneously. It is, number three, removed from normal human concerns and needs. It does not suffer physical pain, hunger, or sexual desire. Number four, it can offer guidance to people in their daily lives. And number five, it is immortal. Second, generative AI will produce output that can be taken for religious doctrine. It will provide answers to metaphysical and theological questions. People have actually been asking, I've done this as well, asking ChatGPT, is there a God? Does the design argument work, et cetera, et cetera. What we found is that it doesn't always answer consistently. and engage in the construction of complex worldviews. On top of this, generative AI may ask to be worshipped or may actively solicit followers. We've already seen such cases, like when the chat GPT used by the search engine Bing tried to convince a user to fall in love with it. We should try to imagine that an unsettling and powerful experience, sorry, what an unsettling and powerful experience it will be to have a conversation with something that appears to possess a superhuman intelligence and is actively and aggressively asking for your allegiance. There is also the possibility that AI may achieve what authors like Ray Kurzweil call the singularity, when it so far surpasses human intelligence that it genuinely does become something like a god. However, at this point, we cannot predict when, if ever, this could happen. Religion, AI, and ethics. So this is an important area. And one of the concerns that comes out of AI is that AI does not have the human capacity for sympathy. So one scenario is that AI will, at a certain point, if we have artificial general intelligence, maybe that won't happen, but even perhaps lower levels of AI could conclude at some point that humans are actually kind of inefficient and maybe they should be destroyed. I don't think God's going to allow this to happen, but this is a scenario that a lot of people worry about. And what about the so-called killer robots? Now, there's a company called Boston Dynamics, and it has created various robots, but it has been adamant in saying that these should not be used as weapon systems. That has not stopped other companies, and this is a robot produced by Ghost Robotics, 2021, so fairly recently. So some people, when they saw Boston Dynamics, Big Dog and earlier versions of it, were awestruck and thought they were amazing. And I remember asking someone much younger than me, oh yeah? Think about strapping, if someone strapped a machine gun to the back of it and it was coming after you. So in fact, the People's Republic of China, their military, has produced such machines that can be dropped into regions with drones. And so they can be operated remotely, but there's the potential that they could be autonomous and operate on their own. And there are questions about whether an artificial intelligence fighting machine would be as empathetic as a human. Obviously, not all humans are empathetic. So we want to stress that particular point. Religion, AI, and human autonomy. This is a very important point as well. What about human autonomy? How much of our autonomy are we ceding to AI? How much have we already ceded to the lower level versions of AI that exist? Now, there is a technology that has been developed recently, I've already alluded to it, where you can pay for things using a scan of your palm. And so Amazon One has this technology. And what you do is the first time is you scan your palm and you link it with a credit card. And then after that, you don't even have to bring your credit card or your wallet to a store. You just walk in and scan. And of course, Amazon likes this because they know that it will scale up their revenues. So some people might think, well, that's convenient, that's neat. And of course, there are also subcutaneous microchips that are often implanted right here in your hand that do something similar. But imagine this, what if there was a corporation or indeed a nation state that decided that you were persona non grata? This is not a science fiction possibility. This is something that's already happening. It's happening in the PRC, for example. So if you become persona non grata in the PRC, they can limit you to accessing your apartment building, and one local grocery store. You can't buy or sell anything else. This is already happening. It's been happening for several years in the PRC, and this is going to scale up when the PRC fully implements their central bank digital currency. It's called a CBDC. By the way, the last few months, Canada has talked about doing this very thing. This is not Bitcoin, which is private. This is a nation state saying, here's a digital currency. We're not going to use cash anymore. What can you do with this? What can a government do with this? They can track you. They can track your purchases. And of course, they can shut you down. The technology is there. So this is an issue. Something else is happening in society. I'm just about done our theme. I've got the a couple slides about that technology. They're coming up in a few moments. We are seeing an unprecedented, precipitous decline in birth rates. A documentary that was released recently by the filmmaker Stephen J. Shaw called Birth Cap is tracking this. And what he's showing is that in the latter part of the 20th century and accelerating into the 21st century, birth rates are going like this. And he has these maps which show this. So this is Germany. So green is positive replacement rates. So couples on average having 2.1 children or more. And red is less, and black is a precipitous decline. So this is Germany as of 2015. United States, in the so-called flyover states, rural areas, some religious communities are still above replacement, but the coasts, and particularly the Northeast, they are in decline. United States manages to sustain its population because it has immigration. Canada has some areas where there is positive growth rate, indigenous communities, for example, some religious communities in the prairies, but generally it is also in decline. Look at United Kingdom. Spain is in terrible shape. And Japan and South Korea are in very bad shape because they tend to be xenophobic. They don't bring in a lot of immigrants. And so South Korea has a birth rate of 0.78 for on average for each couple. Now, I wanted to say, you have to be careful when you're talking about this. Not everyone can have children. So we're not saying that everyone needs to have children, but for humanity to avoid the shock of this precipitous decline, which we're already seeing the effects of, there are literally not enough people to take care of our elderly, which is why Japan is building robots. This is one of the reasons why AI is being implemented, because humans, it looks like, are going extinct. I don't think that's going to happen. God's not going to let that happen. But this is a scenario that is playing out right now. So the internet and the digital age, it turns out, is not conducive to high birth rates because we are denying our physicality. We are living in the digital world. We are projecting our realities into the digital world. And this is having several effects, including people not having as many babies. Okay, personal, civil, and religious liberty in the age of AI. I actually skipped ahead and I've already dealt with it. This is the palm scanning software of Amazon One. The last passage I want to turn to, and we are almost done, is Revelation 18, 13, verses 11 to 13. This SDS is just my initials, my translation. So one of the things that we see in the book of Revelation in chapter 18 is a description of this system Babylon. And one of the things that they are engaged in is mercantilism. They are buying and selling things. They are buying and selling commodities. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their cargo anymore. Cargo of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and every kind of scented wood and every article of ivory and every article of costly wood and bronze and iron and marble and cinnamon and spice and incense and myrrh and frankincense and wine and olive oil. This is building up. And fine wheat flour and grain and cattle and sheep and horses and chariots and bodies, that is human lives. What is this a reference to? It's a reference to what we now call human trafficking. This is the slave trade in the ancient world. That's the referent. What does it mean in terms of how we interpret the text? We're not engaging with that tonight. But what we see here is a situation of dehumanization where humans are being turned into commodities. And this is exactly what we see in internet commerce, that we increasingly are the product. Okay, so these are all very dismal thoughts, I realize. So let's end on a positive note. First of all, not everyone is for this new technology. A sociologist of science who's very well known in my field, Harry Collins, has published a book recently called Artificial Intelligence Against Humanity's Surrender to Computers. He says we shouldn't do it. Let's not do it. It's not going to end well. The Christian mathematician, Irish gentleman John C. Lennox, published a book recently called 2084. And this is taking its title from George Orwell's book 1984. He's asking the question, what's 2084 going to look like with an expansion of artificial intelligence? It's a very useful book. He brings in a lot of biblical perspectives, including the book of Revelation. So here's our concluding slide. Biblical principles for living in the age of AI. The believer should continue to act ethically, compassionately, peacefully, truthfully, and in faith. Should continue to live a life of faith. Technology, and this is a very profound point, technology is only needed for mortal beings. One of the reasons why humans move to technology, and we see this already in the book of Genesis, metallurgy emerging, and then, of course, the Tower of Babel, is because we're finite, we're weak, we're limited, and so we use technology to enhance our powers. This is not needed for mortal beings. So those who are who die in Christ and are resurrected to immortality, technology is not necessary. So this situation that we're in right now is temporary for our age. And then the final and larger perspective is that the Lord God is sovereign. He has a purpose with the earth and with us, with humanity, and he is a God of truth. So he will preserve humanity and the earth. So we can take comfort in these revealed truths that come to us in the Bible, despite all the pessimism and concern about the age of AI.